other places where you can make small changes that make a big difference. Obviously, in teaching or in running a discussion, trying to notice when members of underrepresented groups want to speak, just reminding yourself to notice that. If someone's comment is being ignored or they're being talked over or their comment's attributed to someone else, just say something. Say, hey, isn't that what Sally said? It's very easy to do that kind of intervention. When you're running a discussion or the discussion period of a talk at a conference, say, I'm a big fan of what I euphemistically call active chairing, which is designed to prevent a few individuals from dominating the discussion. I don't know if it's like this in all fields, but in philosophy, the tradition is that the first thing you do is you call on the highest status person in the room, and then they ask a 17-part question, and nobody else gets to speak. So I like to use what I call the one question per question rule, which it's a beautiful rule because all you have to do is state the name of it and nobody can really object, right? Also, I like to use the rule of calling on people who haven't spoken much, which is nice because it will tend to get, you'll be more likely to hear from the members of underrepresented groups that way, but you'll also be hearing from other people who you don't hear from normally. And you can justify just in terms of hearing from a greater number of voices. So some simple things to go and check for. It's worth having a look at your letters of reference for gendered content. Before you send every reference, look at it and think, did I do that? And if you're me, you'll find that sometimes you're doing that. Look at the bibliographies on your papers. See if there are women you should have been citing who you forgot to cite. Again, that's another one where people I know who have done this have been really shocked by what they've found. A few more techniques. One very painful technique that is actually quite effective is before doing something where you're worried that your biases might interfere, spend some time thinking about a past time when you were biased. And that activates unconscious mechanisms that suppress your biases, if you're genuinely motivated to overcome them. There are also what are called implementation intentions. So these are intentions, not just a general intention to do better about being biased, but a very specific one where you you formulate the intention in terms of an occasion and a behavior that you'll engage in on that occasion. So when I am teaching, I will look for women who want to speak, rather than I'll always try to make sure women get heard. And it turns out that makes a huge difference. This one will actually have the desired effect, this one won't. Specifying the occasion for the behavior makes a huge difference. For stereotype threat, there are a number of different things you can do. One is exposure to counter-stereotypical exemplars, which I've already talked about. That helps with stereotype threat. Another thing is to remember that we all have multiple identities, and some of those identities are negatively stereotyped, some of them aren't. Right? So that study of the 5 to 7-year-old girls that I told you about, some of them were Asian American, and Asian Americans, East Asian Americans, are stereotyped as very good at maths. And it turns out that those girls, if you had them color in a picture of a girl holding chopsticks, did even better than with the sunset, because it activated an identity that's positively stereotyped. So if you, urge your students to think of themselves as Cambridge University students, these are not people who are negatively stereotyped. Reflecting counter-stereotypical exemplars makes a difference. Sharing stories of people from the stereotype group who succeeded despite having initial difficulties can make a big difference. When somebody comes to give a talk, have them meet with the students and chat. That can help. Talking about stereotype threat as a possible source of anxiety is effective. There's a study in which it was a physics class, and what they did was they explained what stereotype threat is and said, if you're feeling anxiety, it might be due to stereotype threat rather than to you not being good at physics. Right? You should be aware that this could be stereotype threat you're feeling. And the marks increased by a full letter grade. Another thing that seems to be a problem for stereotype threat, implicit bias, and other issues is what's called the entity view of intelligence. So this is the view that intelligence or the ability to succeed in some particular field, like mathematical ability, say, is a fixed thing that we've each got a certain amount of it and we're stuck with that for life. And, you know, either you're gifted with it or you're not. And the people with a stronger belief in intelligence being fixed that way show higher levels of implicit bias and stereotype threat. If you teach people a different view of intelligence, if you teach people that, you know, the ability to succeed in mathematics is something you can develop through hard work, you can, you know, if you spend more time doing math, you increase your math ability. Tackling difficult problems increases your math ability. That reduces stereotype threat and implicit bias. There's a nice study that was done of the extent to which people in various fields believe that success in their field is determined by innate genius. And it turns out the fields with the highest belief in innate genius as the controller of success are the ones with the lowest representations of women and black people. Okay. So I urge people not to talk about who is brilliant, not to talk about who is a math genius, instead to talk about specific virtues of specific papers, specific studies. More generally, something that students from underrepresented groups will often complain of, not just students, but members of underrepresented groups, is what's called a chilly climate, sort of a generally bad atmosphere. And this can be explicit or implicit hostility. It could be large things. It can be small things like avoiding eye contact that can make them feel like they simply don't belong in this environment. And there are some interventions that have recently been shown to be quite helpful for that. So these were done with engineering students, telling the students at the beginning of the year that everyone feels anxious and ill at ease and worries about whether they belong here or not at first, but that this gets better with time, and having some little testimonials from students who had been through this. Another one is what's called affirmation training, which has to do with affirming parts of your life that aren't so threatening and scary. So emphasizing that, you know, although you're an engineering student and that's going to be a lot of work, be sure you don't forget about the other things you value. Be sure to spend time doing those things that are important to you. And it turns out both of those have greatly increased the success of the women students.